Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you lead it on when I'm falling down? Now the tears are falling from your face. I never
right, folks, welcome to another episode of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick. Hey, look, some people call me Captain James, some people just call me James, and some people call me things that I can't repeat on the radio, but even to them, I send them this, my gracious love for you, even my haters that are out there. There's a few of you out there, not too many, but those of you that are out there that just love our show, we thank you for being on here. And for those of you that don't love our show, but you're listening anyways, then thank you for boosting our numbers. We really appreciate that. Even the occasional middle finger raises our viewing. Oh, I love it. Been a great day today, January 26, 2024. I went out metal detecting today with my good buddy Bravo, the service dog, big 110-pound German Shepherd. Boy, I'd like to introduce him to some of the haters out there as well. He'd sure love you. And we found 3 Civil War bullets and a 1907 Indian head penny. Now, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. Got to put in 11,000 today walking through the woods, you know, trying to watch that thing. And, you know, because I'm getting older. As a matter of fact, I got older today. So today is my 56th birthday. I'm not going to try to hide it. You know, it feels good. I remember when I turned 40 and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm 40 years old. What am I going to do? And I really got all this anxiety and it made things kind of weird. But when I got ready to turn 50, about a month out, I started to look forward to it. Cause I'm thinking, man, I've made it to, you know, half a century, you know, I mean, wow, how's that? And that's a pretty good thing. You know, I've been around since 1968. January the 26th, 1968 was when I was born. And what was so amazing today was just literally, I mean, hundreds, if not close to over 1,000 birthday wishes. If I went and I counted all of them on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X, we're cracking about 1,500 happy birthdays. I had one friend that does metal detecting. And he's a ventriloquist and he's posted his happy birthday to me using his ventriloquist skills. It was amazing. It was just good, clean fun. You know what I mean? And some people think, oh, look, it was really cool. It was really cool to be able to see that. And I am just so thrilled, to have received all of that love and outreach. And then the Oil and Gas Workers Association. Wow, what a post that they put out. Matt Cote and Cody. I'm starting to talk like Greg Meekin, you know. Hey, listen, Val's on here listening right now, so she's going to be on the show as well. But I'm starting to sound like him a little bit, you know. So I guess that's what I get for talking to that Canadian all the time. But anyways, it's going to be a great show tonight. Father Michael and Rich are in the listening room right now. And we're going to bring them on here. But I want to see what happened to Val Olson. She was on here, and I don't know what happened to her. All right, yeah, looks like we lost her. She says she's on here, but I can't see her anywhere on the... Gosh, can't see her on the screen. Anyways, okay. So I don't know how to get her. I don't know. Where are all my tech help friends? And, you know, I just started a new master's program. So I'm a big believer and an advocate for education. I really am. And you know, Father Michael, obviously, he's been to all of the Ivy League, the big name Ivy League schools. And I believe that he would agree with me on this. I don't think that you ever stop at any age, you know. So at 56, they're like, well, why would you want to go back to school? Well, why would I not want to go back to school? You know, I mean, and keep my brain functioning. So I'm taking a master's in science and technology innovation. Look, I'm making an A in the class, but I got my first low grade. I got a 75 on a project on Fusion 360, and it just about, I mean, it really bummed me out because I was scoring, 100, 100, 100. Then I had a 99.8 because I was 1 minute late turning this thing on. Turning this thing in. But still, I was like, and then I got this grade, and it was because, so basically what it is, it's a Fusion 360, and we're going in, we're designing, and I have a friend of mine, and we're, we're designing and 3D printing certain things, but, we're not printing cars and all of these functional movable things. So they said, well, what is it that you're doing? Well, we're 3D printing knobs, radio knobs, things that are broken and need to be replaced, or things that are, get lost. And a military unit, National Guard or active duty, can come out on the economy and can buy one of those from us, So instead of ordering it through the supply chain and waiting a month to get it, they can order it from us and get it in less than a day. And the price tag on it is, we sell some of these things for, 25, 30 bucks a pop. We don't make a lot of money on it. But the instructor was like, well, we'd like to have seen something more complex. So I'm going to have to design something and for this next project that's coming up that's due on the 29th. So whisper a prayer for me, folks, because I've got to use the simulation program in Fusion 360. It has been a struggle. And so I see Miss Val on there. Good to see you on there, Miss Val. And then I'm going to pull on Father Mike and Rich, and Miss Val Olson is on here. Hold on a second. Do I see? Yeah, let me see this right here. Is that who I think is on there? Why, yes, it is. It's Miss Kim. She's on there as well. So we're just going to pull her in too here. So we're going to have a great big birthday celebration here. Let's see here. I've got all kinds of people on here. I've got Rich. Can you hear me, Rich?
Happy Rich birthday.
Gilbert. All right. Father Michael, 1904.
That's official. We've already wished it to you, but this is in front of our listening audience. Okay.
Yay.
Happy birthday again.
Yeah.
We do have a choir. We should sing to him after everybody gets on.
That's good.
We've got right. Kim on here. We've got Val Olson. Can you hear us?
Val, Ken? Where are you?
I brought her into the hot mic. I don't know. Let's see here. Okay, she's sending me a message. She says, I can hear you, but she cannot talk to us. I don't understand that. So we've got you on hot mic, Val, so I don't know if it's some kind of a button. Maybe you have to push the space bar on your button, on your computer. Sometimes if you push that space bar, it unlocks it. I don't know. But she's on as well. And hey, I had a great day today. It's always a blessing to have another day and another, another year. What a wonderful, wonderful gift. I got to tell you, though, as I was coming on and I was setting everything up, I have a mic that sits on this, you know, on this tripod. And I set it, and I grabbed it too hard, and I broke it, you know. And unbelievably, you know, I mean, just ignorant, you know, and I just snapped this thing. So why I play three songs is because I was taking duct tape and taping this thing together, okay? So here I am with my duct tape mic with Kim, and there you are. Okay, hold on a second. I think I got Val now. Hey, Val, is that you?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
I gotcha.
Yes.
I gotcha. Wow, what a great
Happy
show we
birthday.
Got.
Happy birthday. Birthday greetings from AZ48.
Awesome, yes. I love it. Thank you very much. It's a blessing to have friends all over this country. You know what I mean? And it's like... I got to jump in the car and start driving around and seeing you guys. You know, life's too short for us just to spend most of our lives just talking through, you know, through microphones. It's better we can reach up and shake somebody's hand and give them a big bear hug and say, hey, it's me. So, Kim, I owe you a visit. Val, I owe you a visit. Father Michael, I owe you a visit. Rich, I owe you a visit. I owe you all a visit. So, it's coming. It's coming. So anyway, so what are we doing tonight? Father Michael, you're the one that called this meeting together. So tell us, what's the whole show about tonight?
Well, I first wanted to congratulate you and honor you. And I think it's important, you know, I just turned 70 this month, to reflect on your achievements and your life and to really let it be a celebration. And then you project what you're yet going to do to the glory of God. So I feel like it needs to be a time where we honor you, where you share with us some of your achievements and accomplishments. You already shared how you were starting a master's. I started my PhD at 59, almost 60. And I'm just excited about all that God's doing in your life, and we want to celebrate it. So you have to share with us, not be humble. Just share with us what God has done. We'll give him the glory. But this is a night to honor you, James. We all appreciate you very much.
Now, Father Michael, I appreciate that very much. And you know what? It's the friendships that have blossomed from this radio show. I mean, you know, we're touching about 100,000 people, 130,000, however many, you know, throughout the course of a week. And when this thing gets shared and shared, and there's so many other people that listen to it, it's very hard to really – to really calculate the full numbers that we're touching. But I know that we're touching people because I think we've all at some point been contacted. Kim, you know, you've had so many wonderful guests on your show. And then, you know, Val and Greg, they have their show on X that plays on X. It's on Wednesday. And then Rich, you know, I mean, it's like we get calls from people. I mean, I get emails from people and messages, you know, that people will hear something. And, you know, and it's, I was just amazed. I really was really blown out of the water today because, you know, you ever have those days when you wake up and you think, you know, am I really making a difference? Am I really doing something good? And I'll be honest with you. I hit some physical issues there and it leads to a little bit of depression there. But today, you know, every one of my inboxes was just filled with kind, happy birthdays from people and friends that I hadn't spoke with since high school, you know, were calling me. Had a great call with Scotty Melton, the guy that I played football with. He was two years older than me. And I was just such a small, scrawny guy, you know, and when I was growing up in high school. And these guys, they really looked out for you, you know, when I was playing football. And he says, you know, I remember you were small, you were, you know, slow when you first started out, you know, and said, and we would be walking off the football field and you would still be out there running, you know, trying to, you know, running wind sprints and, you know, trying to catch up and to improve yourself. And he said, you know, you, that's just the way you were. And, you know, it was wonderful to hear that. So it's wonderful to see all those things from those folks and to get people that you didn't know that you had an you made an impact on. You know, and it could be something simple, something so simple, like, you know, you shared something or, you know, you sent a nice gesture. You know what I mean? We just never know. It's like I was telling my daughter the other day when we were going to school. I said, you know, when you do something for somebody, it could be good or bad, but it's like throwing a pebble into a pond, and it's all those ripples that come out. You never know. You know, are those ripples going to positively impact or negatively impact? And I think it's up to us to determine what kind of stone that we throw out there. And I've really tried not to throw hard stones at people. But sometimes we all do that as well. So God's blessed me. You know, I'm 56 years old today. You know, I've lived longer than my father. And, you know, my father died when he was 52. You know, hard life with my dad growing up, just to let you know. But he was an amazing soldier. Had a remarkable record in the Army. And I mean, I really walked in that man's shadow, you know, most of my life. And, you know, when he got cancer and he died, you know, that was a hard thing for me, you know, to watch that happen. And that happened, you know, in the year 2000. So I was, you know, I was 32 years old when my dad died. And then the next year, 9/11 occurred, you know, and then everything just, and it just seemed like, you know, when 2000 kicked off, it's like, this is going to be the year, or this is going to be the decade that's just going to kick me in the rear end. And it did. And from, you know, from about 2000 to 2005, you know, life just felt like, you know, it was just getting more and more miserable. And then, of course, things changed. You know, met my wife, got married, have an amazing family right now. You know, we're like everybody else. You know, you hit struggles, you hit, you know, you hit, you know, hard times. But each time, you know, you wake up and you realize, you know, that, you know, God's put you here for a reason, and you got to figure out what that reason is, and you got to get on that pathway. And it could be something as simple as saying the right thing to somebody who is depressed as heck. It could be that one person that just is looking for someone to say something nice to me so that I won't end my life, you know? And I really try to say hello to people and to look at people and to smile at people as much as I can, strangers, you know, people that I know. And that's what I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to, is to doing that. Now, every now and then, you know, I'll run into some jerks. it's inevitable in the work that I do. But I really try to avoid them more now than I ever did before, just because I have found that it's, you know, it's wasted oxygen and wasted time dealing with people or trying to explain something to somebody that you don't even know. It's kind of like, you know, there's people that just come on social media to just trash somebody. Somebody could be in there having a great time and make some kind of a post and, you know, talking about their life, and then some stranger out here in left field comes out and says something derogatory to this person. Don't even know them. And they will waste hours trying to convince this person that somehow they're wrong and that you just don't know me, because they're looking for acceptance from this person that they don't know, this possibly a fictitious figure out there. So my advice to people is don't waste a minute. There's a block and a delete button. Use it frequently, and you will find your life will be blessed. So anyways, what do you think, Rich? Well, did I lose everybody?
I'm here. I don't know if he's here. Is he here?
Yeah, he's on there. I don't know. He may have stepped away, or his phone signal sometimes is bad. Okay. How about you, Miss Val?
Yeah, we should get on with Kim's recommendation and sing Happy Birthday. You know, we've got to have a party.
Goody.
We're supposed to have a party,
goody.
Right? All
yes.
Right. Val's ready. Is Kim
ready?
And James, you can't call.
Val,
Hold on a second. Yeah. I think we've got one more on here. Hold on just one second.
All right.
Let me look here. Yeah, we do.
Come on, choir.
We do. I think we've got Matt Cody on here. Is that you, Matt Cody?
It sure is. Happy birthday, James McCormick.
All right, man.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we've got everybody on here then. I mean, it's like the whole board is lit up. Okay.
Here we go.
If you
okay,
feel
ready?
Better,
Happy birthday to you.
So this is what you get when you mix a Canadian. So what do you get when you mix a Canadian? And Father Michael, you were originally from New York, right? So we got a New Yorker,
New
a Canadian,
Jersey, yeah.
A New Jersey, yeah. A guy from Oklahoma, Texas, and Nebraska. There you go. Oh, man. Hey, we're going to have a good time tonight. So with that being said, let's talk about... Let's go ahead and take some questions. How about any questions out there? Go ahead, hit me with some questions.
Okay, I got one.
Okay.
You know, as you reflect on your life and your ministry, your military service, your family, what is your legacy? What do you really want to be remembered for? Remember, God says he gives us 70 years, and if by strength, 80, you know, so some of us are in the last quarter, but what's your real determination as far as the legacy you want to leave?
I want to leave a legacy that says that, a legacy of compassion, of being able to make a difference in people's lives. You know, the war and the education and the jobs and you know, of course, obviously being a father and a grandfather, you know, all these things are extremely important. But ultimately, it comes down to, you know, how will other people talk about you? You know what I mean? When there's nobody else to talk about you because you're gone. And the one thing that always amazed me about my grandfather, now my grandfather was a wonderful man, and people would go out of their way to tell me about a story about how he had helped them you know, and it was usually helped them financially, you know, because in my grandfather's later years, he became, I wouldn't say extremely wealthy. I would say that he was extremely comfortable, but he was generous, generous with the gifts. People, you know, when I came back home, he had died. People would tell me about how he had paid car payments and house payments and insurance and doctor's bills and just unbelievable. And, you know, you sit around and you think about that, and it's like you go through all of that, and he was giving that away. But I don't ever remember us ever struggling. You know what I mean? It's like, and this was at a time, you know, he was running his construction business, and he had a, you know, a storage building business, and he had a trailer park that he ran, which, you know, in the 80s was really well, but in the latter part of the time it didn't do so well. But we never struggled. We never went without, you know, and it always seemed like, you know, my grandfather, when we won the state championship at Winfield High School for, you know, high school football, he took the whole team out and our parents and the parents for a steak dinner. I mean, you know, at that time, you know, he dropped, you know, $1,500. Didn't bother him a bit because he saw the value in bringing people together. And do you know that that's been almost 40 years ago, and people still talk about that today. We'll say, hey, man, do you remember when your grandpa took us all out to steak dinner? Yeah, I remember that. Man, that was so cool. Yeah, that was such a wonderful thing. And so I guess for me, I'd like for my kids and my grandkids to be able to hear nice things about me. And maybe it would motivate them to be better people in their lives. So, yeah, that's the legacy, you know, I want to leave is a legacy of compassion.
I used to have my cadets write their own obituaries and also to put on some paper what they would want on their tombstone. And, of course, you know, you with your digging, you want to put something like don't dig here. But, you know, you got to think about what's going to last, you know, your example. And, you know, life goes quickly. You know, Billy Graham used to say, he used to tell young people, you know, 70 years is by strength 80, and they wouldn't believe how fast it went. Now, he lived to 99. But I think it's beautiful what you're sharing because that's where, what we have to strive for. Because this is not a dress rehearsal. It happens one time.
Oh, that's so right.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's everything that we do, you know, everything that we have, all of our possessions. While I'm out there metal detecting, the one thing that I'm very, becomes very painfully obvious is that all of these things, our house, our computers, everything that we're talking on right now, eventually it becomes nothing. I dig up stuff, you know what I mean? I dig up foundations to houses, and I look at these houses and I think, wow, a beautiful house that this must have been in the 1800s. And you can almost hear the laughter, you know what I mean, and the tears and the, you know, because it's like at some point in time, this was somebody's home that they thought would be here forever. These things are all temporal, you know, I mean, as you know, it's all temporary. What lasts is exactly what you said, Father Michael. It's our legacy and how people will remember you and what they will know you for. Will they know you for being a stand-up kind of person? Will they know you for being someone that's decent, kind, compassionate? Or will they know you for being someone that is just, you know, a whatever? You know, a jerk or, you know, I look at our current situation in our country, and I'm going to try not to get too political on this, but, you know, I see things going on in this nation that really have me concerned. The border situation and the standoff with the state of Texas right now. You know, I'm sitting here really debating on going down there and joining the Texas State Militia. You know, I mean, and taking a post somewhere along that border someplace, because it's like, what are we going to be known for? I mean, it's like the guys that went and stood up in the Alamo. You know, yes, they perished, and it was a horrible death that they faced. But they left a legacy of courage and heroism and the ability to stand up for something and to be part of something bigger than just yourself. So anyway, I don't want to go on and on, but I'm loving this. Let's take some more questions.
James, I have a question real quick.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Matt. Yes, sir.
You know, I really enjoyed the story about your grandfather and his generosity. You know, working with you for a while now, you're one of the most generous, kind, compassionate people I've ever met, even to the people who are maybe your detractors, your trolls, if you will. You're still kind and loving and caring about those people, even in disagreement. You know, your generosity may not be money. What is the greatest gift that you give to people?
My time. I think it's my time. And I say that because time is very valuable. You know, if I give, you know, an hour of my time to somebody and it has an impact, you know, I've taken an hour of time from something that I could be doing or, you know, I've learned the time management, but I think the most important thing I can give someone is my time, but more importantly, quality time. So it's not just, you know, standing in a room, you know, taking up space, but really listening and really trying to figure out, you know, how do we solve this problem together? You know, look, what's going on with the oil and gas workers is amazing. I mean, I'm just going to tell you right now, I've watched this thing grow. And I see it growing even more. You know, I mean, here we're getting ready to go to Washington, D.C. We're going to become members of the National Defense Council. And, you know, we're going to go to that big ball, the water buffalo wallow there, you know, which, you know, has a significant history, a military history. And the fact that we're able to build bridges. And look, I'm very careful. I try not to use the word I and me. Sometimes it's hard to not use the I and the me. And I think people understand that. But I really love to use the we. So when this radio show or anything that we do, it really is a team effort. You know, everybody on here is so important. And so when I give my time, which I think is the most valuable thing that any of us can give, I remember that. And I see people as being people, even the people that don't like me so much, you know, the trolls or whatever. You know, I take time to listen to even them. I don't waste a lot of time, you know, I don't waste a lot of time if it's just, you know, them wanting to rant and rave. But I do try to get the nuggets, the valuable nuggets that come out of, you know, conversation. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So
yes, it does. And thank you for that. And thank you for not just what you do, but who you are. Because who you are is why you do what you do. You're a blessing in my life and to our organization. I think I used the word invaluable earlier today. You are an invaluable part of this organization and a blessing in my personal life. And so I thank you And I just wanted to call in real quickly and say happy birthday.
Brother, man, thank you very much. And look, you're a blessing in my life. And it's like, you know, it's like every time that you get an opportunity to find, make a new friend and look, man, it's, you know, everything that you're telling me, I'm telling you, you know what I mean? Because it has been, and it will even be better, you know, as we continue this thing going. I think we've all realized everybody that's on this show right now sees that America is at the biggest crossroads that we've ever been in, I believe, in our generations. We see a movement in America, not a violent movement, you know, because people would take that as, oh, well, they're trying to rise up, and it's not that at all. But we're going to rise up. We are. We're going to rise up, and we're going to all go vote, and we're going to make sure that our votes count. And we're going to be watching things a lot closer this go around because, you know, as these last few years have shown us, you know, that there's a crooked, corrupt, evil presence in this country that is dragging us into an abyss and that we don't want to go to. So that's why I'm glad to be hanging out with all you patriots. So thanks a lot, Matt. I really appreciate that, brother. Thank you.
It's an honor. You enjoy the rest of your birthday, and we'll talk again real soon. Thank you, James McCormick.
Take care, brother. God bless. All right, folks, any other questions? How about you, Miss Val?
Oh, I'm just sitting back and I'm smiling ear to ear. There is so much hope and encouragement, and I love what you shared there about time and how your currency is time and what that means, and it's so good. Okay, my question would be about a post earlier this week. You shared a video clip on YouTube through the Smithsonian. And Rich Kilboyne made an appearance in that video. I watched it. It was very cool, about a five-minute video of the 518 Gun Company. And I wanted you to go into in-depth a little bit on how you went to the generation who had went ahead of you and you asked for help. Can you take us to that time and that experience? More than what's in that little video and what that meant to work with those that went ahead of you and what you learned.
Sure, absolutely. Well, growing up with a Vietnam veteran as a father and many, many, you know, I grew up in rural West Virginia, and these guys around here, nearly every neighbor either went to Vietnam or was drafted and went someplace, you know what I mean? It's normally what happens. So understanding, you know, the value that these folks had, they always had these little life lessons, you know what I mean? It was something about, you know, the person that was drafted and forced to go into the military that really didn't want to go but said, hey, you know, it's my duty, I'm going to go anyways. They just seemed to have these little tidbits of information. Now, my dad was someone that was extremely, he didn't like quitting. Quitting was a big thing for him. So if you start something, you had to finish it with him. So if I started playing something, started doing something, you know, I had to finish it. So growing up with that, I knew that generation, you know, they kind of got a bad rap when they came back. Some of them, not all of them, and some of them went on to leave, you know, live very successful life. FedEx, you know, the guy that owns and operates FedEx. He was a Vietnam veteran, a Silver Star, Purple Heart recipient. So, you know, these people went on to be successful. And so when I got to Iraq and I started to look at, you know, what was happening, the guys in Vietnam had already dealt with guerrilla warfare and attacks on convoys. And I didn't know a lot about it. I mean, I came from a combat arms background and, you know, literally most of my time was in armor. And so, you know, we had big tanks and guns and, you know, we went out to, you know, to engage and destroy the enemy by the use of fire maneuver. I mean, that was just our thing, especially when you started, you know, putting armor in. But this was different. This was different. This was dealing with logistical folks and convoys and wheeled vehicles that are not up armored. So I started to do a lot of research, reading. And the one name that kept coming up was Richard Kilblaine. Richard Kilblaine was, at the time, the Army historian at Fort Eustis for the Transportation Corps. And I was able to call him, and I joke around about it, you know, Rich, you know, being the government worker and stuff, and, you know, I mean, in our time zone, I can't remember the exact time difference, but it was something crazy. You know, we were like a day ahead, you know, by several hours. So I'd have to call him at like, I don't know, 11, 12 o'clock in the evening or, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And I would go in and I finally got a hold of him and started asking him questions about, you know, gun trucks in Vietnam, because we're building a unit called the 518th Gun Truck Company. Now, the difference in me doing that was I had to admit some things that I didn't know everything. You know, and that's a problem with some officers in the military. They want everyone to think that they know everything because they're looking at getting a good officer evaluation report so that they can make the next promotion. You know, they're looking for a career. Well, I was looking to survive and to keep people alive, but more importantly, to be able to not only stay alive and get your convoys through, but to be able to effectively engage and destroy the enemy. So humbling yourself is so important, and admitting that you don't know everything. You know, I don't know anything about surgery other than how to take splinters out and maybe, you know, dig something out of somebody's skin. So don't have me do surgery. You know what I mean? Go find a surgeon. It's the same thing with, you know, when we're looking at writing tactics and operational plans and how are we going to actually build this unit. I wanted to talk to the people that had done it and had been successful at it. And it turned out to be just a beautiful relationship. It was, you know, I got so much more out of it, Val, than just what I needed. What I got was lifelong friendships and relationships with people. I got a second family that I didn't have, you know, when I was over there. I got, you know, my father was gone. You know, he was, you know, he had passed away. But I got so many people that were like, you know, surrogate fathers over the course of the years that helped me out. It was a wonderful thing to be able to have that, in addition to having somebody that was smart and can tell you about operational tactics. So, you know, here's some four instances dealing with, you know, near and far ambushes is a well-written operational you know, tactics, you know, and I knew how to do that on foot and in armored vehicles. And what you're dealing with in convoy security is you're dealing with ambushes. Every single roadside bomb, every single attack that you got, you know, it wasn't like you were moving to contact. You're not moving to contact. You're moving cargo so that those that need to move to contact can have their food, their bullets, their repair parts, their fuel, everything that they need so that they can be operational. I learned to have also a level of respect for the logistics field that I don't think I ever disrespected that group. I just didn't fully understand how valuable they were. But like I said in the video, you know, when you run out of ammo, then you're fighting with your hands. When you run out of food and water, you're not going to be able to hold your hands up very long. So you really need to be able to have a good supply line. And so every day that I went out and every day that I looked at what our mission was, I realized there were thousands of soldiers that are serving in infantry and armor units that just like the ones I served in that are depending on me. So it wasn't just, oh, well, I didn't get my convoy to this certain area. No, it was like you didn't get your convoy of cargo and supplies to a certain area. And because of that, they weren't able to carry out a mission, or worse, somebody got killed because they didn't have, you know, the parts to fix the vehicle that they needed or the weapon systems that they needed that they weren't able to take and to put into the battle that could have made the difference. And so realizing that, you have to be able to humble yourselves and ask for help. I know in the military, especially, you know, in the officer corps, like I said before, you know, they're afraid. They're afraid of being looked as, oh, well, he doesn't know or she doesn't know. I didn't give a crap if they said he doesn't know or she, because I openly admitted it. I don't know. But I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to sit down here and I'm going to write this SOP and I'm going to combine what I know as an armor and an infantry guy and what I'm learning from these guys from Vietnam. And what we made was a very beautiful unit that was extremely successful. And I think Rich probably can speak on that very well as well. So, yeah, I hope that answered your question.
That's excellent. Thank you.
So what do you think, Rich? Did I hit the nail on the head, or did I miss anything?
No, you actually did pretty good. No, actually, you gave me too much credit because I was passed you over to the Vietnam vets. And that's where you built a bond with Larry Fink, okay? Because, yeah, you asked me, look, what I knew was general knowledge, but for your situation, you needed a lot of detail. You needed to talk to the guys who actually were in those ambushes. And that's why I passed you off to the Vietnam. Now, the thing I brag about as the Army Transportation Corps historian, and we're talking 2004. The war was only a year old, okay, 2004. I was already in contact with a lot of Vietnam gun truckers, okay? So that's why I was able to easily just pass you off with their emails, okay?
Mm-hmm. So now, Rich, you know some of these guys and some of these stories and stuff. You know, I think now, you know, the Smithsonian Channel, I believe is going to make a sequel. You know, I mean, Beth Garrigle tells us that, and you know,
well,
I'm kind of excited
interested.
About
no,
that.
They were interested.
Yeah.
Because I deal with that, the film industry, on some of my books, and it's very fickle. They can lose it. They get really excited about something for a short period of time, and then they lose interest, okay? They were interested in a sequel to Iraq and Afghanistan, but so much time has passed that I'm sure they have, if they can't pitch that sale right away, they lose interest and move on to other things.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I know that we're going to try to stoke that interest. So I think you and I and Beth are going to jump on a call here before long. And I know you've got a bunch of stuff still. And, you know, and that's the cool thing. We've saved so much. And then we've got our 518th reunion coming up, which is the 20-year reunion, the first reunion. that we've ever had is going to be, you know, they're setting it up at Fort Eustis right now. So it's going to be on the May the 18th, 2024. So have you been following that, Rich?
No, I haven't. You need to be telling me about it and let me know what you want to do.
Yeah. So we got Lewis Cass, you know, Cass, second rotation, E7. Great guy.
Yeah, cool guy, really.
He's a very cool guy.
He was the glue for that second rotation. Yes, he was.
He was. He really was, and God bless him for it. And, you know, I think, you know, he's got some good information. And then our old truck master, Michael Lang, who's out in Washington State, he called me. And, of course, Jody Cuthbertson calls me. Yeah, all the time, you know, just giving me an update on somebody or something. And, you know, we've lost some of our 518th guys. You know, we've lost some to suicide.
Right.
And we've lost, we lost one to drug overdose.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them went to jail. It's just amazing, where their lives go. Some of them have totally turned their lives around. We've got a couple of them that are now preaching the gospel, man. How about that? That's pretty amazing. So I guess it takes, you know, going back to some of these questions about life, sometimes it takes 20 years for someone to get their life turned back around. And
actually, when I got out of the Army, and I was struggling. There was a VFW article, and it said that it takes 10 years for a veteran to going from job to job, whatever, to finally settle into the job or career field they want. And I thought about it. It didn't explain why. It just showed here's the pattern. And I don't think it's necessarily that the veteran has problems adjusting. Well, they do have problems adjusting, but it might not be because they don't know what they want to do. It might be because they have an intolerance for bullshit, and there's a lot of politics and bullshit in the civilian world, and they don't put up with it. So it takes them 10 years of getting fired, saying, fuck you, I quit, before they finally find the shoe that fits.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had a great conversation with a friend today, and he was telling me about some of these veterans' benefits that are out there. So, I think let me just pull this one up because I think this is so cool. Bill Ashton, who used to work for the USDA. Do I got everybody or did I lose you guys? Do I got everybody?
We're here.
Still hear you.
Okay. All right.
Here.
So Bill.
Present.
Bill. Awesome. So Bill Ashton used to work for the USDA. He was their military and veterans liaison. A wonderful man, lives in Florida, retired Navy, Mustang, Submariner, you know, I mean, I just can't say enough good about Bill Ashton, but he says, hey, he says, there's benefits out here that you guys don't know about. Like, for instance, did you know that a veteran with a service dog that the VA will provide for certain service dogs, qualified. They got to qualify. Veterinary insurance. I was like, had no idea, Bill. Had no idea that the VA had that. And I've got a service dog, and he qualifies for that. But these are the things that, you know, these are some of the little tidbits I'd like to hand out to some of these other transitioning veterans so that it doesn't take them 10 years or 20 years, you know, because some of them don't make it to 10 years. So I'm trying to figure out that, you know, that whole suicide crisis that we're dealing with. And I hate to even talk about it because when I bring it up, you know, it's like, you know, we kick this thing around. Ultimately, what I will tell you, there's a lot of soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, veterans, we'll just say veterans, people, family members that are carrying around a world of guilt because they think I should have said something, done something, been there, done whatever. And the answer to that is that it's not your fault. You know, in most cases, no matter what you do, that person wants to end it. They're going to find a way to end it. And all we can do is just give them the information, you know, the little tidbits of information. The service dog thing, if I could speak on that real quick, I have literally watched that change a person's mind from I want to kill myself to, oh, I got to stick around because I got to take care of this dog, you know. And so I've become a big fan of the service dog movement. I used to not be a big fan of that. I used to think, well, you know, because you always saw dogs. They were seeing-eye dogs, you know, whenever I was growing up. They were just for those that couldn't see. And they would have a dog, and they would have a leash, and this dog would lead them around to keep them from, you know, keep them on track to go to certain places. And, but now it's so totally different. And what I see now is it's a life-saving program. It really is. And I've literally seen it save people's lives. So for those of you that are out there, you know, I got my service dog from Ernie Rivera at Valor Canine Medical Service Dogs down in Chula Ota, Florida. I would highly encourage anybody that's looking for a service dog, whether you're a veteran or not a veteran, or you're someone that's with, you know, that has a TBI, Kim, you know, you probably should have Ernie on your radio show to talk about service dogs and helping those people with a traumatic brain injury. I think that would be a good show for you to have. So I'd be happy to link you up with him. So
I'd love to have him. I've had, which I've been here 13 and a half years every week. I've had a couple of those on. I've always been a proponent of service animals. You know, there's a spiritual bond. Sometimes the stuff going on in our head blocks the light of the spirit. And there's something about a service animal with the unconditional love and the loyalty and a kind of intuition that you wouldn't give them credit for. And on either end
they
of that
don't judge.
Leash, where you are and where, and they don't judge, you know, where you're at, where the dog's at, there's a spiritual bond that connects you and helps bring you back to life and air. But I would love to have him on. I've had people from different places around the country that do this and think that it's invaluable to do. And do you mind if I make my
question?
I appreciated what your friend said, and your answer was time. I can speak to that about you because I don't know. I got a brain injury. What was it? Maybe 7 years ago?
Yeah.
Maybe you know exactly, but let's say 7 years ago, I interviewed you. I was very interested. I've always interviewed a lot of veterans. I'm a patriot and was aware of some of the veteran issues. I had you on, and while I still interview a lot of veterans about veteran issues, I was trying to post my shows in different veteran groups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a couple, more than one person, come and say they didn't bother to read the link to say that I was having a veteran helping veterans guest. It really had nothing to do with me. I'm just the mm-hmm. conduit. But they didn't bother to read the link to see what the show was going to be about, and I got approached and was asked if I was a veteran. And when I said no, they kicked me out of their groups.
Ugh.
And so it's okay, because that just, you know, I'm Irish and Italian and an only child and a Marine Corps daughter. I'm a bulldog. So, you know, hell with that. If you can't even read the link, I'm going, if you can't bring the horse to water. And then I got tapped. God tapped me when you were my guest one night. And I thought, huh, 3-time Purple Heart recipient, Silver Star. I know how I can penetrate that group with one of their own. Because what I care about is saving lives. You know, again, it's not about me. But I also sensed a willingness, maybe a, I don't know if it was a need, but a willingness and maybe a need at that moment when you said yes to me
mm-hmm.
about being willing to help others through this medium that you did it. And, you know, James has been on every Friday night for that 7 years, and he and I and one other person, when we started out, we were this show, not this show, but our network is 7 nights a week, and there were 7 hosts. And James and I and one other person are the only ones that are still weekly hosts. I've mm-hmm. got some people that do once a month and some that do twice a month. But one of the things in my position that I've really appreciated about your time is that I can depend on you. And, you know, if you're not there, you've covered your spot. And I mm-hmm. appreciate Father Mike and Rich for all of the assets that you guys bring to the show. But it really means, you know, I'm in charge of 20 people, and they don't show up if they don't feel like it. They don't show up if they're tired. And you're on the East Coast, so, you know, you're a really busy guy. I see all the things that you do and watch those videos and see the TV programs and hear about you going to Washington. But I can always count on you, depend on you every week for all of these years. And there's such an appreciation, because I've got other hosts that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't depend on them. Great people, but I'm picking up after them all the time. You know, I spend a lot of my time picking up after them. And so, you know, the things that, the time that you've put toward the network and the show and all of the people that we serve, and you were just talking about, you know, the suicides and the time it takes to re-enter society, and the ones in jail and the drugs, and, you know, a lot of that has to do with TBI and /
mm-hmm.
PTSD, because blast injuries were the hallmark injury in the last 20-year conflict. And so a lot of that comes from So, you know, when I asked you to come, I thought, what more for those that are suffering out there and having trouble in their 10 years, their 20 years, their 5 years, to hear someone who has gone through the worst of the worst and is here taking his time to share his experience, strength, and hope with you tonight when there's a million other things that he could be doing. You're a beacon and a message of hope. And so I very much appreciate your time. And then for the question, Valerie kind of got me about the generation before. But, you know, the generation after, I realized, well, that conflict's really not over because we're really building and, as you said, making a mess. But I questioned the level of patriotism and in general, and I still do sometimes. But unfortunately, one of the 13 Marines in Baghdad at the end, Corporal Dagan Page, was from here. And when he came home, we've grown, God, I don't want to age me, but like four times our city, four times what it was when I was coming up. But we got almost 500,000 people here now. And the airport is about 40 minutes away from where they were taking this Marine, and there were people, God, I choke when I think of it, but there were so many people at the airport to meet his plane, and then lining the street all the way, 45 minutes worth, wall-to-wall people with American flags on his route, all the way out to where they were taking him. And I thought, wow, that is a rough way to realize patriotism. But I have noticed that there's not as many people at the recruitment offices these days. What would you tell the ones behind you? I know you've got sons. In your own family, you know, that are going to be the soldiers in the generation behind you. So we talked a little bit about the ones before you. What about the ones after you? Because things have really changed. You know, we talk about the 22 a day for veterans committing suicide. That number is almost getting surpassed now by kids on social media.
In my devil's advocate mode, I'll just give this answer. If you want a fucking transgender sex change, join the Army. If you want to fight, fuck it.
Yeah, I don't approve of some of those changes. I'm glad they're giving insurance to service dogs, but no, I don't think they should be making that choice with my tax dollar. But I mean, if kids aren't really even getting up to go out and exercise these days because their nose is in an iPhone, they're not lining up at the recruitment office either. So in your experience and why you joined, found importance in defending your country and why you would go to Texas. You've got youngins that are not thinking about patriotism. They're not thinking about joining the military. And we've got some things that might be coming up here.
Sure.
What would you tell that generation?
Well, the younger generation, you're right. There is a number one, they're tech savvy kids. You know, I've got younger kids at the house, and you're right. I've got two sons that are in, and I've got a daughter-in-law that's serving. So now my one son in the Army is out now, and he says happily, you know, and you know, I had him at our house last week. He had he had surgery on his sinus cavity, a deviated septum repaired, and that's a miserable time. So he stayed here with us, and me and Mom took care of him. And you know, he's 26 years old now, and he's out. He did 8 years in the West Virginia Army National Guard, and you know, he did a deployment during Spartan Shield. But, you know, yeah, things have changed. So he explained to me some of these changes. You know, he liked basic training. He loved basic training, okay? He loved the discipline. He loved the structure. He didn't care to get yelled at, screamed at. That didn't bother him. But what he didn't like was, you know, when you're in the unit, you know, I mean, look, and I'm just going to say this, that, you know, if a female soldier walked up and asked him to go out on a date and he said no, you know, I mean, sometimes that could turn into a sharp, you know, a sexual harassment, you know, complaint. Because not because he said no, but because, you know, things get said, or maybe, you know, you're joking or you're saying something, and you just couldn't joke around. You just couldn't do the things that you could do whenever I was in. Look, we had cadences. Rich can tell you, and I'm sure Father Michael could tell you, that I would be ashamed if my, you know, my mother or my grandmother found out that I sang these things, you know.
Wrong. I'm still not ashamed of those cave calls.
You know what I'm saying. But I would say, you know, you couldn't do that now. So what I would tell, the biggest problem is physical fitness right now. So we have a physical fitness issue, and I talk to my kids about it all the time. Extracurricular activities. You're not just going to come home and set, you know, you're going to play football, baseball, basketball, something. You're going to do something. Be in the band, I don't care. But you've got to do something, because parents are not pushing their kids to be well-rounded. They think because they got a 4.0 GPA and they're doing great in school that they're a well-rounded individual. And then you find out that they're emotionally or physically incapable of doing the job that they may want to do, you know, whether it be an astronaut or a mechanic or anything, but they don't have the emotional wherewithal to go out and work in society because they've never been put in an incident where they have to operate as a team or do physical fitness and let's face it, high schools suck at gym class now. Used to be, you know, it was dodgeball, you know, football, lifting weights. I mean, when you went to gym, you better bring your deodorant, because, you know what I mean? You're going to get sweaty and you're going to get hot. And we did that for an hour, Monday through Friday, every day. You did something. You know, we played a game. We played volleyball. We played basketball. We played something. But it was, okay, I say it wasn't an hour. It's like 45 minutes. You know, you got the time to get dressed and the time to change clothes.
Can I add to this?
All
right.
Yeah.
Because I, coming from Oklahoma, I grew up among the Native Americans, and they had their own sports. Every culture, except the present culture, had its sports. All the sports were built around martial skills. You look at the early Greek Olympic skills, they were all like javelin throwing or whatever, boxing, pugilism, pancratium. They were all, the majority of them were martial skills, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, they were to develop, because where I grew up among the Ponkan and the Cherokee, and I'm more fascinated with the Cherokee. And I've studied a lot about the Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, they have like stickball games or like lacrosse comes from the from some of the Indian, Southeast Indian traditions. But they were all martial skills.
Mm-hmm.
Young men went in there to play those sports to prove they were manly, that they would be great warriors. That's where they developed a lot of their skills.
Mm-hmm.
And where are we today? No, sports, dodgeball was not about building esteem. Let me get this straight. Dodgeball was not about building esteem. It was about humiliation, okay? That's right. Through humiliation. Let me tell you. I was bullied as a kid. That's why I'm a martial arts instructor today. At 68 years old, I'm a martial arts instructor. Okay?
Yeah.
You can react to toxic male masculinity many different ways. You can cower and all of a sudden say it's all wrong. You know, the thing is, when we sat there and we talk, I don't want to take this conversation. We're celebrating your life. But we talked about it before, and the idea of we have bullying and stuff like that, and the thing is, the solution is you've got to end bullying. No, you're never going to end bullying. You can't end bullying. Teach people how to deal with bullying.
Sure.
You know, when we were young, we got our asses whipped by some bully. We came home. What did our parents tell us, James? What did they tell us?
Well, they told you you need to learn to deal with that, or, you know.
That's right. Go back there and whip that kid's ass. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have online bullying. Well, there's ways of dealing with that. I love getting in debates with liberals. I've had so much fun. I don't have any liberal friends anymore, okay? Yeah, you can teach a person how to deal with physical bullying and online bullying. But instead we go, oh no, it's all wrong. We got to stop the bully. We're going to stop something that can't be stopped instead of teaching people how to deal with it. Okay, anyway, go ahead, move on.
Let's go. So again, I would say to tell people, parents, this is where I'm talking to parents right now. Parents have got to get engaged, and that you've got to learn to tell your kids that it's time to put the cell phone down. Let me tell you, the best thing that could happen to American schools right now is to make the kids leave their cell phones in their backpack or in the locker and suspend them when they pull them out, when they shouldn't have them out. I'm just telling you. Because right now you see all of this nonsense that happens. It's because somebody wants that 5 minutes of fame on TikTok. You know, they're saying, hey, get the video, get your phones all set up where I'm getting ready to go slap the shit out of this person. You know, they ain't even going to see it coming. You know, get it out. Make sure you're videotaping it. And those kind of things can be solved real quickly by saying, put the cell phone away. You know, if I catch you with a cell phone, let me tell you, if I was a teacher, that would be the one thing I would tell people. If I see you with a cell phone out, you get a zero for the day. And I'm sending you down to the office, period.
I did that in college, James, with my students. And when we'd have an exam, I would say, leave your cell phones here if you have to go to the bathroom. Because they don't talk to each other. All they do is have their noses in their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an easy thing, but that was the first thing. Shut your phones off.
Wait, okay.
Using for this class.
All right. So
that's right. In every college class
I like
that
to play the devil's advocate. Okay. I collect cell phone images of ambushes. Because the great thing is there are people who do not have much to do in the middle of an ambush inside a gun truck. and they pull out their cell phone or their camcorder and they start recording. And I collect those.
Yeah.
Because they are, look, James.
We're talking about school. We're not talking about theater.
No, we're not. No, no, no. The thing is, it's a recording. No, you're looking at it from one perspective. I'm looking at it from another. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at it from a pedagogical perspective.
Tell me the scenario. All right, Father Michael, tell me the scenario where someone's going to pull out a cell phone and record something.
If there's a fight, if there's something they don't like that they want to report or expose.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Hey, I watched that. My son mm-hmm. was teaching in one of those schools in Richmond. And I saw the videos of it, like, holy crap. All right, this is a minority school. Because I've worked with the other schools. Virginia schools were really good. But there was this one minority school in Richmond. There was absolutely no discipline. They were breaking up violent fights throughout the day. Okay? It's a historical record. It gives when I watched that video of that fight, I realized how bad the public schools not the whole public schools, but that particular public school system was.
Uh-huh.
That is why.
Can I jump in?
Go ahead.
Okay, on the school theme, I want to share a story with you from Canada, from Alberta. When my son was in grade 4, we had him enrolled in a charter school, which means the parent funds a portion of the school fees. And they're still using the public education directive within the school. A note came home and they said, your school is a test tube school. We want all of the students, we want every student in our school to have Google Chromebooks. And at first you hear this sounds great. Every child should have a device was the, view, the standpoint of what they were saying. I had an issue with this because we had a no screen rule at home. And just like that, we now had a child with a computer unattended without parental guidance, without parental involvement. And that Google Chromebook allowed them access to the internet and to have private one-on-one communication with teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So many, many problems came from this. This went across the entire division. And, there was one teacher who was charged as a pedophile, caught with a child, late at night one night, one of the students. But one of the big problems was the cyberbullying that came in through the school's network because they insisted all these children absolutely had to have their own email address to access their Chromebooks. So the police were getting involved in finding there were, weirdos from other countries who were targeting through the school accounts. So this was happening back in 2015. I don't hear this so much in the United States, but it's really something that should be monitored when it comes to a culture in the school and devices. So just wanted to add that in.
And Valerie, you're right. Sex trafficking.
Let me address. No, let me address this. Okay. You use the internet. Everything that they were trying to teach your child how to use, do you use? Is there anything they were trying to teach your child how to use?
How about porn sites? They were caught.
No, that's right. That's right.
Accessing porn
unfortunately,
sites at school
right,
that was coming
hold,
in
let me, the let me let me just point that out. That is an unfortunate thing about the internet. After your kids grow up and get out there, they're going to have access to all the things you did not teach them about. But when you talked about internet and internet bullying, you have access to the internet. Look, I'm telling you right now, the thing is, I relished liberals attacking me, okay? Because I knew how to deal with them. I knew how to deal with them, all right? You can call that, yeah. What they were attempting was probably internet bullying, but they weren't prepared for someone like me, okay? Yeah, I'm a conservative with a master's degree because they were totally convinced that the urban elite were more educated than the rural America, okay?
So what did you
the
do?
The conservatives. What?
How did you win the fight? What did you do?
Logic. Pure fucking logic. Seriously, some of these discussions would go on for days. All right, where I knew I was winning is when they started calling me names, okay? When a liberal starts calling you names, calling you a racist and a fascist, you know you're winning the argument, okay? Because anything logical they have presented has failed.
Mm-hmm.
These debates would go on for days. And this is why I have no, on social media, I have no liberal friends anymore. No.
Yeah.
Because I've won all those debates. So what I'm saying is, you can sit there and say, to protect my child, I need to say, you can't be exposed to the stuff. That when you leave my home, I don't want you to know about pornography. But then, guess what? I protect you from it. And then, because your hormones set in, all right, your desires set in, and you leave home, and now you're free. You're free. And now you get exposed to it. Did I prepare you as a parent for how to deal with pornography? Did I prepare you, or did I
Let me say something
it?
Here. Pedagogically, with some of the training that I've had in education, you know, too much too soon. In the Hebrew Bible, until you learn the Hebrew language around 12, 13, all of the stories of rape and murder and so on and so forth are in the Hebrew language. And so, you know, if you traumatize a child by exposing too quickly, a parent is the one. It's not that you weren't. You know, I grew up in the projects. I knew stuff as a six-year-old that I'm ashamed to say. I had adults talking around me, stuff that I was exposed to. That violated me. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some filtering. It's not like you didn't prepare them. You don't want to traumatize them. And when they're ready
correct.
To be exposed to the horrors of the world, then they can handle it and process it.
That's right. What we're saying, what you and I are in agreement in, is you have to raise your children in a way that when they finally get exposed to pornography on the internet, they'll know how to deal with it. They'll know the consequences of it. They'll know the effects of it, okay? Are you in agreement with that?
Tú eres el más pornográfico que no que hay, estúpido.
Wait, who's talking now? Because it sounds like Spanish to me.
Spanish or Chinese, I'm not sure.
No, I think it sounds like Spanish too.
Yeah. The thing is, no. See, when I hear parents talking about trying to protect their kids from the vices out there, no. Because when their children leave, they're not prepared to deal with those vices that they are now exposed to.
Mm.
So
well,
I raised five children, and I don't agree with that assessment. I was exposed to too much.
Yeah.
Okay, and it really damaged me. And my children, I always talked frankly, even about sexual things, and I had four daughters and a son. And
Father Michael, let me tell you, because you've done better than I did with my children. No. evidently you did something right. You did something right. I know you, and I know your four children, and they're all God-fearing children. They all grew up, except for the one who overdosed in fentanyl. She did to the drugs, and the fentanyl's what killed her, except for her.
Right.
But she was not a bad person. She was not a bad person.
Misguided.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me,
yeah.
All right, tell me and the listening audience what you did to prepare them for the vices out there. Because trying for, I'm going to just tell you, as a parent, you're trying to protect your children from it and tell them it doesn't exist when they leave your home
and get exposed to it. That was not my approach. I was very candid.
That's why I want to know.
Very
frank. What did you do right?
Whatever questions, whatever inquiries, whatever situations, you know, of course they heard me preach all the time also, but no, I very much shared with them, and not to scare them or not to shield them like it's not out there, but I can especially speak of my baby, you know, and hope Lord willing is going to be a doctor here, but very frank conversations, talking about things very candidly. Now, I never let them see things because I wouldn't watch things, okay? And so and say, oh, yeah, you can watch this, you know, our movie. I did show my son the fight in Bronx Tale, and I told him, you know, they were unfortunately fixated on the F word, my Italian people, but just because I wanted him to see that. So I never shielded them.
I'm going to tell you this. You were, when the Harry Potter movies were coming out, you had bought into the conservative religious hype that Harry Potter story was about a witchcraft, which it was.
Hey, man, if you're going to talk about demonic stuff, you better know what you're talking about.
Go ahead.
Because I do know, okay? You're talking about that. The priest that's training us, this high-level priest, will say the same thing. This guy's brilliant. And so, yeah, that's not even something.
Did you let your kids read Harry Potter?
It never was an issue. You got to remember, my oldest is 38.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I remember someone complaining about how the author of Harry Potter is one of the richest women in England. And then I read the response is, any woman who can teach so many thousands of teenagers to read a 600-page book deserves to be the richest woman in England. Okay, Dan, when you asked me about, there was a time where you asked me about it because of the popularity, I said, and I told you, if you pay attention to the Old Testament, it's about magic. All these
We talked about it. I've never had a real interest in that other than when I prayed for scores of people who've had demons. I've understood that they've dabbled in magic. And that's why they're involved.
No, that's true. No. That's a different show. That's true. The people who have no understanding of the spiritual world explore into that. They are subserved by the evil because the devil will reveal himself a lot quicker than God will. Okay? That's a reality of it. But the thing is, I told you that the theme of the Old Testament is magic. It's miracles.
I have 14 years of college in Old Testament. I have 14 years of college studying Scripture, and you're going to tell me about the Old Testament? Come on. I wouldn't tell you about history stuff. You're adding your sphere of confidence.
Excuse me,
you're not
I am.
Telling me anything.
No.
No, you're adding your sphere of
confidence. No, because you and I look at the Old Testament from different perspectives.
Because you don't, you're not trained.
Purely from a religious perspective.
No serious theologian looks at it like you. Because you're not trained.
That's correct.
You just watch
YouTube.
Okay?
That's correct.
So you're just bringing it up, but it's not something that's held by serious theologians.
All right.
I wouldn't dare tell you about methodology.
You're correct
in
that, but I'm going to tell you right now, and this is what I explained to you, because I have been attending church since I can remember. The stories we are told when we go to Bible school, when they pull us, the young juveniles, away from the adults, teach us. What do they teach us? They don't teach us New Testament. They teach us the Old Testament. They teach us about Samson, and they teach us about Daniel. They teach us about miracles, magic. That's what
not
they
magic.
Teach us about.
It's not God's power. Is not magic.
All right.
Yeah. That's
I'm
a
not
juvenile
going to argue
way
with
of approach. But that's a juvenile
look,
way of approaching the literature.
Go ahead.
That's a juvenile way of approaching the literature, and
but
you as an amateur.
I'm going to tell you right now.
You're not the only one that went to Sunday school or catechism. That was your experience in a very provincial situation. That doesn't mean that's everybody's experience. I was catechized till I was in 12th grade by Catholics.
Yeah. Hey, look,
and it was
I got
a little more intellectually.
I, as a Baptist, was totally immersed. I don't know about your baptism, but I was a Baptist. I was totally immersed at 12 years old. So I know my baptism counts, okay? I was dunked under the water, okay? Not sprinkled. I don't know what your baptism was. But the thing is, what I'm telling you is there's a common theme. There's a common theme between magic and miracles.
And I'm telling you, you're uninformed, and you don't understand God's power, nor do you understand the scripture other than mythologically, not theologically. Okay, so if I were to talk to you about methodology as far as a historian, you would understand more than I could. But theologically, you're talking about stuff that serious theologians do not take seriously.
No,
and I'm just telling you, you're an amateur, and you're talking about
first of
just
all,
stuff that's
show is
out of
about,
your sphere.
You're right. This show is about, we want to celebrate
James
McCormick. But here's the thing. Right. No, here's the thing. All right, let's just conclude it with this. No, theologically, I can't argue with you, but historically, I can. Historically, I can, because I understand the history behind.
Let me just say quickly, C.S. Lewis was a great mythological writer, okay?
He was.
And some of the people
I don't deny that.
Listen, Rudolf Bultmann and some of these great German theologians, and they were trying to say the Gospels were myths. And Lewis said, look, I know myth, okay? Flannery O'Connor, she knows symbolism.
Correct.
And when you study the genre and when you take a deep dive, there's a lot of theories, but the church hasn't lasted for 2,000 years because this was all hocus pocus.
Wait.
And so
No, Father Michael, let me explain to you, okay?
Okay. You explain to me.
Okay. Do I believe in God?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. No, I'm going to tell you right now. No, I'm going to ask the difference between belief and knowledge. Do I know God exists? Absolutely. I know God exists. I have personal experience with God. I know God exists. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And everything I have ever read and studied convinces me God exists. Now, I am taught to believe that Jesus is the living Son of God. Okay, I am taught that. I have no doubt in my mind from in everything I've learned, God exists. But I am taught to believe that God is his living son. Now, I have come to believe that God and Jesus are all one and same through the near-death experiences. Right? That's an experiential process. Okay. So everything else, that I am come, so for the listening audience, look, for the listening audience, you're debating with his priest.
What's that? I didn't hear
okay.
you.
All right, all right. And if I do this, if I do this, I do this with the hope to lose the debate because I know that probably 70% of our listening audience are not believers. And so when I argue with look, Father Michael Fischella and I became friends the first time we met back in 2000, and he was my school chaplain. And whenever I refer, always, I don't know what your real title is in the CEC, but I always refer to you as my chaplain, my army chaplain,
mm-hmm.
because I can't take that damn uniform off any more than you can. Okay,
you
went from blue to green. But the thing is, we can argue
right.
and we can debate. But
yeah,
nothing
fun.
Changes.
No fun.
Nothing changes the fact
right. Amen.
That we all agree on one thing. God exists. God exists.
Yes. And Jesus died for our sins as God the
yes.
Son. Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Oh, it's good. It's good. But since we got 5 minutes and it's your birthday, James, can I at least pray a blessing
yeah.
on your life?
Yeah.
Yes, please. Absolutely.
Unless you want to say some stuff to us, but I'll make it quick. Heavenly Father, we just thank you that you've given each of us a life. And we thank you, Lord, as we work together as a team, Lord, that we can be more than we could be when we're just individuals. But we do thank you for the years that you've given James and how you've spared his life and how you've taught him so many things. And I thank you for the accolades and the great things that have been said concerning his life. And I pray that his latter days shall be greater than his former. I ask and pray these things in Jesus' name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
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 So we got 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And I just want to say to all the listeners out there, thank you for listening to Continue Mission and the Brain Injury Radio Network. And it's been a great 7 years, and we're going to continue. You know, go as long as we can, Kim. That's what we can do, you know. It's been a great show, and we've had some great times.
Yeah, appreciate Rich and I'd be able to have some fun, but James, we just pray a great blessing on your life, and it's been wonderful to hear, and we look forward to many, many years with you.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, as Rich says, he likes to play the devil's advocate, but he plays the devil's advocate with the hopes that he loses. So I think that that's... That's a great thing because, you know, I think that, you know.
It's true. No. Guys, for the listening audience, it is really, really true.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way, you know, I mean, look, it's been a long, wonderful life. And every mm-hmm. minute that God gives us is a gift. Every minute. It's not just a year. Mm-hmm. It's every minute. And, you know, I think we just need to do the best that we can with every minute that God gives us. You know, don't waste a minute on nonsense. You know, there's plenty of nonsense out there. And I will say this in the last minute and 58 seconds. I've watched a lot of things happening in our country. And I'm praying for our country. I'm praying for, you know, our borders to get secure. And you know, and I'm praying for a new president. I'm just going to tell you that right now. I'm praying for Donald Trump to get elected. I'm just telling you all, because I'd rather have some of those mean tweets and $1.50 or $1.70 gas than what we've got right now, because at least our borders were secure. We were energy independent. And I really started seeing a future for my kids. I do think, however, that we have to work on the civility piece of this. You know, eventually we've got to come together as a country to work together to do good and righteous things. And we have to humble ourselves and seek forgiveness. Ask God to forgive us for the horrific things that this country has done. And believe me, it's not been supporting Israel in the war against Hamas. Don't believe the liberal garbage. Stick to your guns, patriots. That's all I can tell you. God bless you. And thank you, Liz, for listening to Continue Mission. I'm going to let you guys close it out. Everybody say goodbye tonight. Everybody have a little something. We got 20-some seconds, folks.
Happy birthday, James.
Great to spend your birthday with you.
Hey, God bless.
Good night, everyone.
Rich, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
God bless you. Have a good weekend.